Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Coming to you from downtown Toronto, this is Hockey Central at Noon with Darren Millard. A special show coming your way today. Only happens a couple of times a year, in which we basically put the games from the previous night and the schedule coming up aside and just chat with one individual who is nice enough to join us in studio. Here with Nick Kypreos, Doug McLean, and the future Hall of Famer, Eric Lindros, who will be inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame on Monday. Thanks for joining us today. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Weird saying future Hall of Famer. Shouldn't you say
It's not official yet. It's not official yet.
Matt, can you just come in and put his mic up a little bit?
Shouldn't say future Hall of Famer.
It's going to happen on Monday night.
We said that a year or two ago, future Hall of Famer.
Hockey Hall of Fame elect.
Okay,
which is a popular phrase right now. So we'll get into all the stories from your career and the different highs and lows, but this whole Hockey Hall of Fame induction thing, what's this weekend going to be like for you as a hometown guy?
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun. My poor wife has been organizing so much. We've got a lot of great friends coming in from out of town. Obviously, tremendous friends here in town. There's the game Friday with the Flyers, Leafs Flyers, and so there's a kind of a ceremony there, and then an alumni game on the Sunday, and then the induction on Monday. So there's lots to do, and it should be a great weekend.
And the best part about this is, for those that don't know, it's Thursday, Hockey Hall of Fame weekend coming up, and you get ready for it by playing in just your regular skate this morning. you and Nick and a few of the boys just still lacing them up. So that's kind of a cool thing too.
It is. You know, we were at the same rink that, when we moved to Toronto when I was 10, North Toronto was our home rink, and we were there all the time. North Toronto, St. Mike's, Forest Hill, but really at North Toronto quite a bit. And the same general manager, the same guys behind the Zamboni and the skate sharpening, a terrific crew, Eric and Waller and the bunch. It's fantastic.
And they added a nice touch to the arena. they put his number, 88, and his name in the ice.
Oh, really?
Behind the nets.
Now that's cool.
Yeah,
are you the only?
I put it on my Twitter and my Instagram. If you want to go see that.
So, are you the only Hall of Famer that skates with this group, or is there a number? I know you're in North Bay Hall of the Centennial. Yeah. But I mean, and I'm in the Prince Edward Island Sports Hall of Fame and the Brockville Sports Hall of Fame. But anyway, are you the only NHL Hall of Famer? Like, does anybody else come in and skate?
We haven't seen Paul in a while.
No,
so you're the only one.
Can Darcy Tucker get in?
No, he may get into like
Thomas Cabrera.
Darcy plays. Darcy can still move. Darcy's a great player. Darcy set up Nick a few times this morning,
but not Hall of Fame material. I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
I'm not on the selection committee. I've got enough.
Just leave this alone.
It's a good skate, though. Okay, so
it is a good skate.
It's a good skate with a good pace.
So here's what I was saying
for 50-year-old guys.
So this is what I was saying about walking in this morning, knowing that you were going to be with us, and I remember as if it was yesterday. So we've gone through the whole Connor McDavid since he was 14. But walking in today, I was thinking, I remember as if it was yesterday hearing about this kid in Toronto, then this kid in CompuWare, this kid that's going to be the next greatest player in the National Hockey League. And how bizarre is it that time passes that quickly? I mean, when you think back, and then when you're draft year, and I remember going – I was with Detroit at the time, and Brian Murray sent me over to watch Fedorov. And the whole conversation while I was in Russia and in Europe following Fedorov, should we make a deal Fedorov for Lindros for the draft? Mm. But I mean, how quick is it
goes,
going by?
It goes like that. It really
bizarre.
Does.
No. We didn't need more complications in the trading for Eric Lindros in the draft.
Okay. But it was and Brian Murray with Detroit was heavily engaged with Quebec at that whole time, but it was bizarre.
When you're going through that process anywhere between 14 and up until the draft,
Kipper, you don't even realize what's going on, right? Like, it's not until you're 17 that you think,
you don't get the wave that everybody else
maybe
did.
Maybe back then? Not at all.
Oh, you're kidding me? You didn't know until you were about 17 that you...
I honestly didn't think that... I thought, you know what? When I was 17, I thought, I might be able to crack this league and play a few years in the NHL. That's how I looked at it. That's how I felt. Things go quick.
Yeah, it was amazing. But the chatter about Eric at that time was the very same as the chatter about McDavid or Crosby. It was the very same.
You think the kids today, and we speak of McDavid or even Matthews coming in Toronto.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Are they better equipped today to handle it? Because it certainly seems like they can come in and be.
I think there's some more coaching that's involved with it. I think in terms of handling the press and handling the day to day, you walk into an organization and you're Connor McDavid's the big wheel, and they want him out at a bunch of different functions. So you've got the PR group of an organization probably at going at it a little bit with the GM who wants his player to rest, but. There's a fine line there, a gray area where visiting hospitals and getting him out and being part of the community. I think that's a battle as a GM that you could probably talk to more than anything.
Well, it's just
any of us, rather.
The kids seem to be, it starts at such a young age now. I look at, what my son's going through with these midget programs and Bantam programs. It's almost, they're run like junior teams almost, it's.
So a lot of the organizations,
right, all over North America. It's bizarre. Like it's nothing for a peewee team to take off and go to Europe for 10 days. It's bizarre what the kids are getting thrown at them at a young age. But
Eric Lindros is with us for the hour. Don't want to put you on the spot there, but Nick booked you, so I'm going to blame him. going into the Hockey Hall of Fame this weekend.
I do everything around here.
Yeah. We appreciate that.
You're the franchise. He was the franchise in Philly. You're the franchise here.
Man of the people, Kipper. Man of the people.
I just want to get through the hour without my back completely going out from the morning skate.
I'm telling you.
I'm getting
he potted two. He got two today.
I just got a text from somebody who was part of your skate saying Nick got two.
He had two today.
But Eric, it's bizarre. When I go out with Nick in Toronto, it's like I'm with a Hall of Famer.
When did this become about me?
Bizarre.
I'm with you.
He's a legend.
He
played 52 games for the Leafs. It's like he was here 12 years.
Eric, what do you remember about the first year in the National Hockey League and being with Philadelphia?
A blur. Really, it was a blur. Our team, we weren't the deepest of teams. Bill Dineen was our coach and a great person. I don't think you can ask for it. If you're going to walk into a situation, having a coach like Billy Dineen was the best for
Why?
It. There was some structure, but he was old school. There was a lot of humor involved. He knew we weren't super strong. Strong at all. But he knew that there was a moment to have some fun, even when things were going bad. It was, there's a couple tough years there when we were thin.
Who took you under your wing?
I had great roommates. I had Keith Acton, Dave Brown, Craig McTavish, and through it all, I lived with the Dineens, Kevin.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So it was, I really lucked out in terms of that. So.
You come into the NHL and you mentioned Bill Dineen because I've known Kevin and all the Peter worked with me for 10 years in Columbus, but they're just to have a guy that's as real a person as Bill Dineen was.
Yeah.
There was no frills.
No, there was nothing.
He was just a real guy.
There was no gray area.
To come in as a kid and to have a guy as real as Bill Dineen is pretty cool.
Well, I remember being, we were in Quebec. It was our first game in Quebec and things are,
a little hairy, a little hot.
It was, and
but they were all talking in French, so it was okay. You didn't really understand.
So we're waiting, and Billy never came out for the national anthem. And back in the, I guess it would be the WHL, and he was part of that. The benches were on different sides, so now the National Hockey League has got the benches both on the same side. Billy thinks our bench is still where the penalty box is currently. So
he's lost.
Game's about to begin, and there's Billy knocking on the penalty box glass and then scooting across the ice to start the, we're looking around, where's our coach? But things happen.
And Hitchcock was hoping he wouldn't show up so he could get the coach. Was Hitchcock there then? His assistant? Wasn't he with
Bill? Was there early, yeah. He was there early.
He would have been hoping he wouldn't show up so he could coach.
Oh, come on now. I don't know if you want – you know what? I've been to a bunch of these the national events, and Ken Hitchcock can walk in, and he knows so much about hockey.
Yeah.
He is such a great asset for a national program. Not just your own team, but figuring out who you're going up against and the ins and outs of them. I got to
– Yeah, no,
he came close in Philly. You had some good teams. What was missing?
We didn't score enough goals, and we let too many in. So a combination of both.
That line in Philly, you know, the Legion of Doom.
Just lean
line,
in there.
That Legion of Doom line was, I mean, if there was, you know, you think about dominant lines in the NHL, and I coached against that line for 3 years.
You were in Florida, weren't you?
Time? But that line was so dominant.
Did you have to go through Eric to get to
that? They went through us.
Yeah, we played a six-game series.
And then they beat Pittsburgh.
But that line was so dominant, Eric, for... You know, you think about line combinations today, but that line had everything.
It was the year of the rat, wasn't it?
That was the year of the rat. But the Legion of the Doom line. Oh, that was annoying.
That really was annoying.
I hated those 900 rats on the ice every time we scored on
rats.
Yeah. But think about that line, how good it was.
We had fun playing together. We had fun coming to practice. And it was getting to the point where, you know, if you're going to go through all these 3-on-2 and regroups and we go in and shoot to score. Let's score. And let's not leave unless it's in the net. It got to one of those where it was just a challenge all the time to go at it. And great guys off the ice too. So much fun. We all lived pretty much in the same area and spent a lot of time together.
Michael Renberg and John LeClair, for those that don't know, because it is a while ago, the Legion of Doom. Do you remember how the name came about?
No idea. I didn't even know what it meant until...
Really?
It's embarrassing. Yeah. My wife looked it up.
So this was after you were done?
It never occurred to me to really look into that. You know, it was a nickname and went with it, and I didn't.
I remember.
Own it, but I
so
didn't.
Do we, so
look
do you
at
know?
It. Look it up.
You tell me.
No, look it up. Look it up.
So the Legion of Doom, I'll tell you what my recollection was. Jody Hull, the trainer, came in my office in the playoffs, and he said, they brought in Eric Stick into my office and showed me this piece of lumber, 2x4, that he used
as
a stick.
Black Shearwood.
Oh my God!
No, it was Bauer.
Bauer. That was a piece of lumber. And the trainer says to me, Smitty, Dave Smith, Doug, Jody can't go. Lindros cross checked him in the back, and we think he's got it broken. Dad. I said he just cross checked him with his. He said, "No, look at the piece of lumber he cross checked him with." And poor Jody, who was a valuable guy for us.
Are you talking DC Comics?
I think that's where it came from.
So it's a Legion of Doom is a group of supervillains,
right?
Led by Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor, that's it. But go through some of the other names because I can't figure out. Johnny and Rennie.
Bizarro, Brainiac.
Bizarro. Come on, where do you
Brainiac,
go with this?
Giganta, Cheetah.
Yeah.
Gorilla God.
All right. Yeah. So pick it.
It's suited. Toy Man is another one. Scarecrow.
Anyway, I always knew that.
How long was it together? You were doomed.
I didn't realize. How long was the line together? Three or 4 years?
Oh, longer than that.
Longer?
Yeah. Rennie ended up getting traded for Chris Gratton.
95, we beat Quebec, who were ranked number one in the Eastern Conference. We just won the Stanley Cup, and we're feeling really good about ourselves. And then we go up against...
In 95.
Yeah. And Eric Renberg and LeClair just ran us right over.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Right over.
You guys are just...
And then the next year, we ran them.
One of my favorite stories still is we were playing the Flyers, and Eric took a slap shot, maybe top of the circles, that went right under the bar, and Glenn Healy, it just went right by Glenn Healy's ear. And it was like a shot like I've never seen before in any game. And we walk into the dressing room, it's all quiet, and Glenn Healy just pipes up, "Did you guys see that shot? I could have been killed."
But you know,
between periods.
That's all he said. So, he says, "Did you see that slap shot he took? I could have been killed."
So you and I have talked about this a lot over the last number of years about Eric, and this summer I got a call. Scotty Bowman phoned me in PEI about coming. He was coming to PEI and he was looking for directions. Scotty's always looking for directions. how far is it from Moncton to? So then we got talking because he was on the selection committee, and we got talking but you and I for a number of years have said when Eric was in Philly or during the prime of his career, was there a more dominant one-on-one guy in the NHL? Like, it wasn't even, I mean, I remember going into coaching
every aspect of the game, though.
Every right? aspect
so
of the game.
So we're talking about that
skill,
window.
Toughness, power. I mean, the whole, it was.
But we've talked about that.
The answer was no.
Oh, come on.
How long have we talked about that? No, I mean, yeah. no BS.
Well, you know what? Yeah. It seems to me like it's the last 6 years has been debating whether you were going to get in or not, or why are you in, or when are you going to get in. What was that like going the last few years listening to guys like Doug McClain?
Say you should be in.
In the media, like... was it getting a little tense here the last couple of years?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you and say I didn't know what day the selection committee made the decision and that they were to call you or you know, it was announced. And then even this year, JR in New York was so I've gone down
John
to Barry,
the PR guy in New York,
who watches every show.
So
I've gone down to Barry. To Keenan's got this thing arranged for Russian television, talk about the World Cup that happened in 96 and how, you know, 20 years later, blah, 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 blah. So we're doing that. See Dale Hawerchuk in the car going back and JR calls and says, have they called you yet? And I said, no. Should they?
What do you know?
He goes, well, what's happened in the past? He goes, well, they generally call by now, yeah. it is what it is. But no, we kept driving, and sooner, you know, the phone did ring, and
a good moment.
It was a great moment.
So you look at the number first that's coming in.
What's that?
Do you look at the phone number, the call display,
it doesn't
call
say
display?
Anything. It's all very
unknown.
All very tight. Unknown. Yeah, it's all very tight. So,
so this could be a telemarketer or the call inducting you to the Hall of Fame.
I was picking up everything that day. there wasn't one getting through my fly trap.
I want to get to some of the characters that you played with, too. Ron Hextall.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Intense.
Yeah.
Intense.
Because you're intense. You want to score. It's true. You don't leave a puck in practice until either the goalie covers it or he puts it in.
That's the whole thing. That's why when you were talking about Michael and Johnny, a lot of the goals aren't pretty. It was just continuing to do it. Ronnie was Ronnie worked hard. He worked hard, and he's done a good job. He did a good job in LA, and things are starting to turn around in Philly. So.
What was your best attribute? You had the size. You're physically gifted.
I think anybody, when you're having fun at whatever you're doing, you always seem to do it really well. Mm-hmm. You do it better than you did it. When in days that you're not feeling great, I think it might be true for everyone, but I think that when I was feeling really good and feeling really strong, it would carry over to performance.
So, what did you have to work on the most?
Work on the most. Geez.
Not getting frustrated?
Well, there is some frustration. Yeah, you know, there's a bit of that. Saving your energy. There's only so much energy. And I look back and I think if I could pull back about 20% in terms of physicality, maybe there's something there. Maybe I'd have a little bit more in the tank at certain times of the game. Not to say when you do hit, don't go at 80%. Go full out. But the number of times you hit, pull it back a bit.
So less is more.
Less is more.
Some kids, from the moment they put on skates, 6, 7 years old, to the day they retire from professional hockey, they're just one of the better kids on their team. Now, I think we've had this conversation because we've talked about our kids.
Yeah.
And being a bigger kid,
mm-hmm.
not having coordination, being a little awkward. That wasn't the case with you. Like you.
I had a couple of years.
You had some struggling years when
you
were a kid, correct?
Three to 4 years when you were 3 years old and 4 years, you really struggled there. Yeah. But beyond that, you were good.
Were there like when you were younger, were there some issues?
I was larger when I was younger. I was a bigger boy when I was younger.
Balance was an issue.
When I started to grow, and I hit puberty a little bit later than most, that was, and I grew 10 or 11 inches in 1 year. I would fall down some stairs at school.
Doug does that, but late at night.
So, yeah, all upstairs. So, falling up is worse because you hit your face on the steps. Anyway, so when you were in Philly, it was a really pressure. I mean, when you first went there the first couple of years, the team wasn't good, but then the team became real good. And there was I sensed being in the league at the time, there was a ton of pressure. Ed Snyder was a great owner, but a tough owner. Bobby Clark, there was just a ton of pressure to win at that time. How was that whole experience? And you were good. You were close. You went to the finals against Detroit. You could have won the cup in that era.
We had some deep teams. Yeah. We did. And we didn't. I look back at the Detroit series, and that was probably the shortest week of my life. You know, we go into game one, and it wasn't – we were at home. Roddy hit the post on a shorthanded situation. We lose the game closely. Game two, we lost again, but it was still a really
– battle.
Close game.
Yeah.
The only one that we got smoked at was
game three.
We got absolutely drilled. Yeah. It was – oh, my God.
But you go into that thinking, hey, we got a shot. We got a chance to win the game.
We got a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no –
But they were a good team.
Wow. Geez,
they were really good teams.
They had some, were they trying out Sergei as a defenseman?
Defenseman, yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you're looking back at that, I don't even think he skated backwards.
Yeah.
Like he was always in motion. Yeah. No, he was roving. Yeah, and exactly. they had a great team. Mm-hmm.
Eric Lindros is with us on Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, and Doug McLean. The healing with the Flyers. Can you take me through that?
Well, you know, you get.
I think that was really important for that Flyer fan base.
Probably you. Yeah, no. I think there's a lot of time wasted and energy spent looking at things that have happened in the past. And you know who was really good about it was Paul Holmgren. He'd call and say, you know, I'm looking at this date. I really think it's important. I'm calling you way in advance. I want you to think about it, and I want you to call me back with any questions that you have. And he would start the process and get things. And Homer's been great throughout the whole process. I mean, it's fine. Listen, what's happened has happened. Mm-hmm. If we're going to cry about spilled milk here, then we're wasting our time.
But I watched you come out at the start of the season this year, that all the Flyer Hall of Famers, it was cool. It's nice to see the outdoor game when he went back and played it.
And they gave me that little tiny helmet.
It was like Beetlejuice.
It was a big helmet.
Can I have a youth medium, please?
It was a big shell. It was a big helmet.
It was a peanut shell.
Have a golf ball.
The Flyer organization, though, like, and I was privileged to sign as a free agent there. I never got to play, but I did spend 3 or 4 years training camps. It's incredibly a tight-knit group. And that's probably because of Mr. Snyder and the way he conducted himself. But there was an intense to that organization that I...
There's an intensity to that whole city, right?
Really?
You know, you got the Rocky movies going on there. There's
a different vibe.
There's a different vibe in Philly.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Totally.
And it would be amazing to have a championship team there.
Oh.
You know, you can look back at past mistakes, but... the intent was always about just wanting to win so badly there.
But you know what? And when Eric went there, he typified what the Flyers fans were like. You know, whether it's the Eagles or whether it's toughness, you know, the star that was big and played that game.
It's kind of what they grew up in, the 70s, right? Yeah. So the way that they played in the 70s, and that was...
That laid the blueprint.
That kind of does, right? And then you look at the way the rules were, and what are you going to do? If you got the rules, then you got to go with strength.
Yeah.
You got to go, like, you know, Kipper will tell you, you got to fight through every little bit. You know exactly.
Yeah.
So they went with bigger teams, and they went with playing physical.
And the fan base is great across the board. The Eagles, the stories about the jail cells and the basement of the vet and the veteran nice. Stadiums. And remember the fan, the Flyer fan that fell over the glass trying to get a tie when Ty Domi was in the penalty. I mean, yeah, there's
they were a vicious.
Come on now.
Vicious fan base when you went in there. And I mean, not vicious that they were passionate. Trying to get at you, but just great, fans.
They wouldn't make it easy on the opposite. It's the same thing as when you go in junior. If you go into as a general, Oshawa general, you go into Peterborough.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Pete's coming back here.
So. It was kind of, and the old, like, we played at the Spectrum and then moved to the new building. Yeah.
First Union Center.
I coached the first game in the new Union Center after playing in the Spectrum, but it was such a atmosphere in the Spectrum, unbelievable atmosphere in the Spectrum when they come on the ice. It was like wild. And then you go into the new big building and it was still the same atmosphere. It was still wild.
I think they worked on the acoustics. I think they spent a lot of time, because that's the culture. It's loud and it's aggressive. It's Philly.
When you go into your Hall of Fame this weekend, and you look over your career, is there as much thought about being a Ranger or a Leaf? Or I mean, does that come
great
into play
cities.
Too?
Great cities to play and really good people and all of them. Really fortunate. Doug Armstrong in Dallas really went out for me. You look in New York, Slots was always, he looks out for his guys. He really does. He truly looks out for his players. And in Toronto, I was only here for a short period of time. But ironically, our coach is, was Pat Quinn, who's also going in and being honored this weekend. So, it's just you go from New York, where you got Robert De Niro walking down the street, to being in Toronto, where you walk into a diner and everyone in that diner before you go to practice knows whether or not you had a stinker the night before or a good one. It's just it's a whole different environment,
What's your greatest accomplishment? Because you played in Olympics before the NHL. You played in Olympics as an NHLer. You won an Olympic gold. You won a Hart Trophy MVP.
I don't think you look at it in terms of that. I think you look at it in terms of being extremely lucky with how many people that never get recognized that have helped you along the way. That's what I'd rather focus on than any one particular thing. You look at Larry Marson, for instance. He was my coach, and I used to go to his hockey school, and then I was my coach in junior A as assistant coach. He'd spend hours with me after practice, just hours. He didn't need to do it, but he would spend so much time breaking down the game, working on deflections. Little saucer, the little things that you need, the tools that you need to go into play. Yeah, there's so many guys that like that. One of the most fun years I ever had playing was at St. Mike's when I was 15 and playing junior B. And ironically, I'm skating. Scott McClellan was our coach there, and he comes out and skates with us a couple times a week still. But a terrific group of guys, and Wes McCauley, who's now refereeing in the league, he was on the team. We just had a really good team. I think we had 14 or 15 guys that received scholarships that year. So I mean, that's a
great run.
That's a great run, right?
You still love to play.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Hockey, if you look at hockey in a dressing room, when you're done, I look at our room, and we've got people from all different walks of life. And so you're going to get people from, you got Bay Street guys, you got some money guys, you got guys that work for the city, you got real estate guys, you got all these different people from so many different walks of life. And when you get talking and having conversations, everyone's got a different perspective. If you're always hanging out with the same group, everyone's going to have that same perspective. But a dressing room gives,
and it comes full circle, right? I mean, that's the way you started when you're 6 or 7. Everybody comes from everywhere, and it just comes right around in a complete circle.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty neat.
You have a ball now, playing with Nick, getting a chance to be on his line.
Nick needs to get out more.
Seriously.
Now, he played well today, but I just want to make sure it wasn't,
attendance is an issue.
He's picking his spots.
You go, like, so many guys play the game. So many guys are stars in the NHL. And then I see them near the end of their career, and I'm thinking, you love to play the game. You had a ball playing the game. But how tough does it get near the end when it really, you know, you had your issues with concussions. How much fun was it at the, you know what I mean?
I didn't have a fun time at the end.
You know, it sort of goes from a blast to making it to the pressures to injuries and then grinding.
I wasn't the same player after I got hit a few times and knocked out. I wasn't close. And although I still love the game and I could get by and contribute here and there, it wears on you that you don't or you can't play to the same level that you once could. You're not the same. You're not the fear of cutting through the middle. There's a number of things, but it wears on you. But listen, you know what? That happened.
Yeah.
And I look forward every week to going to go skate with the same group of guys that, you know, we just pick a jersey, whether it's a dark jersey or a white jersey. And, you know, that's how we pick teams and no referees. And you just go skate. We just have a good time.
So did you have to have that conversation with yourself or did somebody?
In terms of what?
At the end.
At the end? No, I knew. I was.
We all know.
You know.
We all know. Yeah. You don't know how you know, but you know.
You know, it's
that's
time.
Enough. Yeah.
But you don't know how you know, but you know.
You don't know how you know, but you know.
But isn't it amazing? Like now, in guys that go out and play, like the love of the game comes back so fast. Hey, like you think about when you get out there.
Not for everybody, though. I'd say more guys never skate again than skate, and that's what I love about
the guys that do. The guys that do go out and skate and give it a chance. It becomes like,
there's,
oh, my
there's
God,
a
how
skate
much fun
in,
is this?
In Newmarket with Darren Shannon and Wes Jarvis and Mike Gartner and all these guys. And I Chris King, I love the way that those guys want to go out and play all the time.
They love the game.
We're going to take a break here and come back and finish up with Eric Lindros. But before we go, you're an emotional guy. What do you think that's going to be like when you make that speech on Monday?
I've got so many people and so many things to be grateful for. So it's, I haven't, they want you to put the speech in yesterday and I haven't quite got it finished.
Really?
Kelly, it's coming. But we'll get it sorted out. But
how many times have you changed it?
A bunch. But it's, you know, it's just hard. It's hard when you look back at something you've done since you're 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And you try and condense sum it up in the amount of time that, you know, so hopefully hopefully I have something for you.
You will.
Are you going to
this cry? Show,
you?
This show has helped him. Hey. This show has helped his speech.
That's
just,
right.
There you go.
He just threw a pen at me. He's the second person on this panel to throw something at me live on the air.
Damn.
I agree. Well, he was out. He used to be out at our skate, too.
Yeah. And no high ones went to him?
Oh.
Like, seriously.
I remember asking him a question one time. We were doing this sit-down, and I asked him a question. I don't even know what it was about. And his answer was, so, what do you think is going to happen when I shoot one right at your head later on today? And it wasn't even the answer to the question. I'm like, okay, I don't think I'm going to get an answer to that. Okay, we'll shelve that
despite
conversation.
Despite concussions, I still don't know what he's saying.
It's Eric Lindros with us, about to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame on Monday night. He'll have his Hall of Fame weekend, the Hall of Fame game on Friday, and all the events that go with it. But Eric has been nice enough to stay with us for this entire hour on Hockey Central. And Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet, the NHL network in the United States, getting some great response from down south. And if you missed any of it, check out our podcast on iTunes.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's been nonstop stories here on Hockey Central at noon. Darren Millard with Doug McLean, Nick Kyprios, and in studio for the hour is Eric Lindros, who will be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame officially. Will you get your rings on Saturday?
I believe so.
Okay, and then the whole shebang on Monday with that emotional speech that you're going to cry. Just got a text. You don't have any? Oh, you do have a bottle. I thought you were out. It didn't have any more things to throw at me. Ask Eric about doing drills to prepare for your Wednesdays and your Thursday skates. Do you still do drills? Because when I went out a couple of times,
yes,
you would do drills. I'm like, I hadn't done drills in 20 years. You love doing the drills.
Well, it's not just that, but I think guys when they get ready to go, we don't skate every day. Mm-hmm. So if you take 5 or 10 minutes and you do a few, your hands get warmed up. I mean, think about how often you touch the puck in a game, And if you can be touching the puck for, you know, through the course of a drill, a lot of one-on-one stuff, a few shots, the goalies are going to get warmed up, and you're going to have a better game because of it.
How do you develop the one-handed wrist shot that you
take? It's backyard boredom.
You know? Really? Because it's unbelievable how much you get on that thing and can put it anywhere you want.
Oh, I don't know about that, but that was always kind of one of those fun trick shots. You know, Stumpy Thomas has got that kicker one?
Yes, the kicker.
The kicker? The one-hand kick. I can never do it. Stumpy can do it you can do it amazing.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how much hockey are you watching today?
Not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much. We've got three young kids at home, and it's not the way it used to be. I get the highlights every morning, and I watch a little bit here and there.
And whatever you do see, how do you see the game as it's evolved, even since you've been out?
The game's incredible. The game is so fast. You know, I went down and I watched the North American team play at the World Cup.
Yep.
Against, I think it was Finland or Sweden. It was in the round.
Beat Sweden.
And and it was just incredible to watch these guys go. Mm-hmm. Like the speed and their ability to transition left and right, their mobility. They're just so fast, and they rip the puck. There's not one guy out there that doesn't rip the puck.
Your observation about this current generation, this group of 20-year-olds that are coming in, is the first generation under this new NHL from the lockout.
Yeah.
From the last season.
You know, that they're the first group that's come through there, and we were speaking about that in the dressing room this morning, that, you know, this is the first group that started with the new rules and have grown up with the new rules. And I think because people can always adjust, but I think it's a real benefit.
So
it's great.
We're in a interesting era in the game where a lot of former players are really getting involved in management, mm-hmm. whether it's player personnel, whether it's general manager, whether it's president of hockey operations. There's a ton of guys, which is really unique. I think it's really good for the game, but it's really different. We haven't had an era where as many guys have got, especially stars. Does it ever tweak you to get in the game in management? I know with young kids it's challenging.
It is.
You see a guy like Stevie Y, and you see, you know, Wayne is back in now, but there's a ton of guys in the game. Even like you mentioned Howard Chuck, I mean, doing major junior. A lot of guys are in major junior. Yeah, have you thought about getting back into the
in
game?
In that sense,
sense.
I am years away. I mean, my kids are so young that I wouldn't have time for it at all. No, it wouldn't.
Doesn't interest you.
Well, it's just not a priority.
Yeah.
You know, maybe later on, maybe years down the way, but it's not a priority now.
You might be dragged into the rinks. Fairly soon with your kids.
Yeah. For sure.
What kind of hockey dad are you going to be?
hopefully quiet.
He stinks. Why is my kid playing with that guy's kid? Who is that coach back there?
Well, that just gets right into Rowan's Law and culture and sport and things like that we're trying to change here in Ontario and set a blueprint for. But
you want to go into depth in that just briefly?
It's a concussion situation, and Rowan Stringer passed away two years ago or so. Second impact syndrome. She was a rugby player, and the coroner has a list of 49 ideas and different things that she saw that could be done differently. And they've asked a group. It went in the provincial level, and it was passed by all three parties to set up this law. And then they've pulled together a group of 12, 15 of us to put together what we are going to in 9 months give that. Should tick off the list of each one of these 49 ideas the coroner has.
Wow. And yep. Now being a dad, hockey dad.
Well, you know, concussions are going to happen. And I'm not seeing growth in hockey. You talk to guys at Bauer, you talk to, you know, in terms of market shares and things like that. But you're not seeing things go up. And I'm so nervous that people are going to turn away from hockey because of concussion. I think it's one of those things where they're going to happen. Let's take care of them. Mm-hmm. Let's really get at this. Let's come out as one voice. Let's come out with the same protocol all the way through. I don't know why there's different protocols from hockey to horseback riding to soccer to a concussion's a concussion in my eyes. So if we could
collaborate
yeah. and bring it together, tighten it up and have one voice, I think we're going to get much further along the way. And then we got to pick it up in terms of research. We don't have anything tangible out there.
What we need is money behind the research. And I think everybody can do a better job of making that commitment. Everybody.
Yep.
So as a hockey dad, you're going to be a pain in the butt. Mm.
I always love practice. I always love practice. I think back to some of the best times that I had. It's with my dad, whether it be in the morning at a local rink or in the backyard. And I always thought I was pretty good at taking the puck off my skate and getting it to my stick real quick and shooting. And I really believe it's because my dad was such a shitty passer.
So you're going to do a backyard rink?
We got a rink where that's the other thing about being in Toronto right now and my kids growing up in Toronto. There's so many outdoor rinks around, and we're extremely blessed here to have the situation that we have in terms of that.
Will you during at any point of your speech, will you cuss at all?
I'm not sure. Things happen.
Because you can on the radio.
Because you can.
Well, he can, but we can't. He can, but we can't.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, sorry about that.
But
you know what?
No, you can say the S word, right, Matt?
So one of these.
No, sorry, you can't. About
that. When
just four guys sitting around talking.
Well, hey, when you Matt, win the Hall of
Fame. Matt, hey, listen. A terrible job.
When you go into the Hall of Fame, there.
Give me that pen back.
You see it with so many guys when they go in the Hall of Fame. The parents are a really big part of it. And I'll never forget, I spent a month one summer at my cottage in PEI talking to Carl Lindros, trying to convince him to come to Columbus, to sign in Columbus.
Carl or Eric?
No, Carl.
Carl. Oh.
Carl was acting. He was acting.
Oh, no, it was agent. He was always my agent.
We talked a lot for about a period of a month, and I had never met Carl ever.
Dad's a good man.
Give me numbers.
But anyway, we didn't come to an agreement. But I was driving them crazy.
You're giving us a lot to think about.
And Carl, Carl was terrific.
What would you have done?
Terrific.
What were you willing to do back then?
I don't know what it was. Well, I only had so much money, but I mean, I was trying to be fair. But anyway,
I wasn't that good then.
but that was the only thing I had ever dealt with Carl on.
Yeah, and my dad's a straight up guy.
When you go into the Hall of Fame, the parents are always
at the forefront, as they should be.
Yeah, so it must be pretty exciting for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And things weren't always fair. When I look back to what my parents had to endure. What happened was my parents really opened up every option that was available to me and allowed me to make an educated decision on things, whether it be where I wanted to play or how I wanted to get there. Mm-hmm. And that was that. It had nothing it was nothing more.
Do you think that they got a bad rap early? Because it seemed, with the differences in Philly, like once you left, we never heard of them. There's no issues.
Well, anyway, I'll start off by saying what I did, people had done before me.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
Lemieux did the same thing. Identical.
It wasn't, but
he refused to go to the table. He owns the team now. He's the owner.
Well, we have anyway.
We have less than a minute to go here.
Anyway,
cool for your parents.
It was great, but you know, my brother went through the concussion situation and knew quite a bit about. My dad picked up the slack, and he knew so much about concussions that when I was going through them, it was unfortunate. I guess it was the silver lining to a dark cloud. That when I went through my scenario, my dad was so well informed on how things went that, yeah, I mean, when he would speak up and you know, in terms of representation, you want people looking out for your best interests. And in terms of having parents look out for their kids. So that's just it.
But, you know, there's so we got
one thing to make the NHL, but when your kid goes in the Hall of Fame, that must be unbelievable.
Yeah, my parents.
They knew in North Bay.
there's some guys that you go into the Hall of Fame and you go, they benefited from wide open 80s, whatever, 70s. They couldn't play today. I look at him.
Oh,
anytime, any place, anywhere.
He's better in this game today than he was then. Congratulations, Eric.
Congratulations.
Well deserved.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Coming in. Eric Lindros on Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet.